I'm Matthew Petty and this is Intersection. The Central Florida Expressway Authority controls 109 miles of roads throughout the region and in the last fiscal year collected about $340 million in tolls. Just under half of that, 46%, goes towards debt payments, a quarter towards system projects and the rest towards operations, maintenance, administration, renewal and replacement. The five-year work plan has a budget of $1.2 billion that goes into construction, widening and paving. The Central Florida Expressway Authority was formed last year, expanding from the Orlando-Orange County Authority to include Lake, Osceola and Seminole counties as a truly regional transportation authority. As Orlando continues to grow, commuting becomes an even more critical part of the economy. The interstate is undergoing a massive transformation, but what about the toll roads? What part does driving play in Orlando's growing economy? Lake County Commissioner Welton Cadwell is the chair of the Central Florida Expressway Authority. I spoke to him at the County Commission offices in Tavares. Welton Cadwell, as County Commissioner, one of your concerns is increasing the county's employment base. How does transportation broadly fit into that?
I think what we're doing is connecting communities. We have always been kind of the outlier county in this region. A lot of people have lived here and had to work downtown. We think now, with the especially with the Wekiva Parkway, that's going to open up more opportunities for folks to locate their companies in Lake County, more opportunities for our folks that have to work downtown in Orlando or in Seminole or Osceola County to have more quality time at home.
Well, let's talk about that project you mentioned that's going to link Lake County to Seminole and Orange counties. It's the 25-mile Wekiva Parkway. It's a massive roading project that will complete a ring of toll roads around the Orlando area, and it's been in the works for decades. Welton Cadwell, can you give us an update?
Yes, we actually were able to obtain a TIFIA loan through the federal government, which we will pay back at the lowest interest rate historically that anyone's qualified, and that has to do with our financial stability. And that project, the portion in Orange County, but which affects Lake County the most, will be finished in 2018. And so it's happening as we speak. They're working on that corridor as we speak, and you'll be able to access two exits in Orange County off of 46 and Round Lake Road. Mm-hmm. And then the third exit that will affect Lake County is on 46, and that will be the folks that are heading towards Seminole County at that point.
So this project's pretty far along, but with any big roading project or transportation project, there's always a little bit of pushback, right? You get some communities to say they don't want a road going near them or through them. How do you manage that?
I think on our perspective is that it has been needed for so long. The Wekiva Commission met for years to make sure that we protect the Wekiva area. And once they got past that hurdle, everyone understood there needs to be a road through there. Everyone also understood that Wekiva protection area needs to be protected. So this particular highway system will be different than any other system in the country. And we've done that work ahead of time. And people trust that's going to happen because of the process that the Wekiva Commission went through. And now that Seminole and Lake have a voice, we are the Central Florida Expressway. We no longer hope that they'll listen to us. We are the Central Florida Expressway. And so I think that level of trust that this board has been able to do in the last 16 months has helped that too.
And when you talk about, you know, being real close to real Florida, for example, I know there are a bunch of turtles or tortoises that had to be relocated for that project.
Yes, on the Lake County side, the work with the Wekiva Protection Act, a lot of the open space was mitigated on the Lake County side because Seminole had already grown out towards the Wekiva, and we're okay with that. We like that. And those areas that you'll see as you're coming into Central Florida from Jacksonville on I-4 or wherever, and once you get on the Beltway to go around to the other end of I-4, you're going to see an amazing large swath of property that is Florida, and that wildlife corridor is going to be protected. And so a lot of that mitigation, again, was done in Lake County, and we're fine with that.
Well, let's talk about I-4 Ultimate for a minute. The Expressway Authority is giving drivers on certain toll roads a break if they want to avoid that construction on I-4 for the next 6 years. How does that work?
We thought that with all the work that was going on with I-4, that we've always thought our system was a good alternative and that it's a good way to get around Central Florida. But for those that haven't used us in the past or because of what's happening in I-4, looking for other ways to get to work or get to entertainment or to get back home, that we would be able to increase our ridership, of course. And since that was going to happen, we were going to reduce the tolls. on 417, 429, and 414. And we're able to do that, and we hope that the people will save around $15 a week and be able to keep that money in their pocket as opposed to sitting still on I-4, which right now they don't have to pay a toll for, certainly. And our roads are a choice, and they can do the math, and it may make sense for them, quality of life value-wise, to be home quicker, and also from the normal toll price they'll save.
So the whole point of tolls, Welton Cadwell, is to pay for the construction of those new roads, but once they're paid off, once those roads are built and the loans are paid off, shouldn't toll rates go down at some point?
You would certainly hope so, and as we grow into our five-year plan and now our 40-year visioning master plan we're looking at, in Florida, it's been made very clear to all of us in local government, the only way to build any new regional roadway is going to be by toll. The federal government, if you look at MAP 21, they still are talking three-year funding, six-year funding. That's nothing in transportation. The state of Florida tells us there's not enough money to build new networks, and that's what we're doing. We're connecting Central Florida with a network, and the only way to do that is with tolls. We would hope, maybe not in my lifetime, but in somebody's lifetime, that our responsibility in the area we're responsible for, we would have generated enough money to build the roads that we needed to build and to maintain those roads. But the realism is in Florida, and especially here in Central Florida, it's our only option to build regional road networks.
I guess Central Florida is fortunate in regards to having more people coming to the state. It's a growing population. You're going to have more drivers on those roads, therefore more revenue. Aside from the I-4 Ultimate thing to help out drivers, you know, when was the last time the authority had a serious conversation about reducing tolls?
We have one every time we have a meeting. We've talked about when we reduced the tolls for the I-4, while the I-4 project was going on, we had that conversation. We'll have those now. That's one advantage of having, for the first time in the history of the Expressway Authority, the majority of the board are elected officials. And with the counties that are represented, the four counties, the city, and then three governor appointees. And so it's a representative form of government we live in, and I think now the users of the toll system are going to have a lot better voice on the authority. And I don't think, even though we have some automatic toll increases in place with different barometers that we would look at to see if those would happen, we will have that dialogue.
Is that something that people sometimes criticize the authority or even you for, the cost of tolls?
No one likes to pay a toll. I understand that. It's a choice you make, and hopefully you can afford to do that. But certainly nobody's like, man, I'm glad I'm going to pay $3 or $2. But they also know the value of it in regards to their either a business decision for them getting to work or, again, a quality of life decision getting home quicker with their families.
Welton Cadwell, how does the Central Florida Expressway Authority decide where those new toll roads should go?
We in the region that we have members, we're going through that process now, our 2040 plan, and we've asked any of the transportation agencies, we've held public meetings in all of the counties, and just asked people to bring forward to us what they see we should be 40 years from now and where are the other opportunities. The plan that we're bringing forward now has got a corridor in the south end of Lake County that we'll look at, that we're going to ask the Central Florida Expressway to look at. The one thing that people need to understand with the Expressway Authority is we get no gas tax money, we get no federal money, we get no state money. Everything we do is with toll money. And so any project that we look at has to make fiscal sense. While we try to stay ahead of the curve when it comes to development, we don't really drive development. We're an option that if a county or a city decides to grow in a particular direction, we're a transportation option that they can use.
So the Wekiva Parkway, you know, building that road's taken a while. It takes a long time to build any transit system, whether it's a road or a rail service or even a bus line. Is Central Florida ahead of the game, or do you think it's going to be left behind as more people pour into the state?
I think we're a lot further along pavement-wise and being able to do things than we were even a few years ago. Because of the regional way we're approaching the network now, I think that part of it, we're all right. We have built everywhere we needed to be building right now. The thing that's going to be interesting is as we decide what we are and when the other partners come to us, be it SunRail, we don't know what our opportunities are in our own right-of-way when it comes to multimodal. Maybe it's bus rapid transit. We don't know. That's the process we're going through now. And a lot of that will be decided by our ridership and the public input we get. And, again, that's the advantage of having elected officials on that board, mm-hmm. is we better have a pulse of what the community wants or we won't be there very long.
So when you look at federal data, you can see that the Lynx bus system in Central Florida operates more efficiently than its peers in Austin, Texas, or Charlotte, North Carolina, and it still struggles for funding. So here's a question. Should toll revenue be used to fund Lynx or to help fund it?
That's certainly a discussion that we'll be glad to have with the folks. Right now, the toll systems that we have are priced to pay for the maintenance of our roads and to build identified new roads. And so while we take in a lot of money and people see that as some kind of cash cow, it's really not, because the only way to do anything right now would be to abandon the mission of the Expressway Authority, and that's to create this regional road network. But we want to have those conversations. If there's an opportunity where we could work with Lynx, with Lake Express, with any of the other providers, Sunrail, we want to have that conversation. And when it comes to transportation, we want to be at the table and we'd like to be leading a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a prediction, Welton Cabwell, for how the road system's going to look, say, 20, 30, 40 years out?
I think that once the Beltway is complete, we'll be able to maintain a transportation system that no matter when you come here, whether it be 5 years from now or 20 years from now, you'll remember that that was a good, well-kept road network. That when you're riding on the expressway roads now, you can tell you're on a different type of highway. And we hope to maintain that. We think that'll be the centerpiece for the region, to connect the region. And you and I, in our worlds, may know where county lines are, but people don't care. They don't care that right now I'm in Orange County and now I'm in Seminole County. They want to get from point A to point B. And this is the first vehicle we've had for all the counties to be at one table making those decisions, the real decisions, not planning decisions or Chamber of Commerce type, doesn't this feel good? These are real decisions we're making that will affect the Central Florida network.
Welton Cabwell is the chair of the Central Florida Expressway Authority. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. When we come back, a panel discussion about the Central Florida economy. Intersection returns in a minute. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. Orlando ranks second in the United States out of major metropolitan regions in terms of job growth. Last year, according to the Orlando Economic Development Commission, the city contributed 20% of Florida's total net job creation. It's a rosy picture for Central Florida, but there are challenges too. What kind of jobs are growing? Are high-tech, good-paying jobs growing as fast in Central Florida as hospitality jobs? And what about the Space Coast? How are things out there? Well, joining me in the studio to talk about this, Sean Snaith, economist and director of the Institute for Economic Competitiveness at the University of Central Florida's College of Business Administration. Sean, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Also joined by Michael Zaharias, manager with the Florida High Tech Corridor in Daytona Beach. Michael, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And Dale Ketchum's chief of strategic alliances with Space Florida. Dale, thanks for coming in.
Always glad to be here.
Well, Sean, let's start with you. Orlando is leading the way with job growth, but where are those jobs being created? What kind of fields?
Well, it's actually across sectors of the economy. It's pretty strong growth in almost all sectors of the economy. You know, the one exception would be the information sector, and that's still, I think, impacted by structural change in traditional media, newspapers. That sector, I think, is still trying to shake out how technology is ultimately going to transform it. But beyond that, you know, we have growth, yes, in hospitality. It's been strong. That's been a key driver for Florida and Central Florida. But, you know, there are jobs in other high-paying sectors as well. So right now, it's pretty solid growth in Central Florida statewide. Yeah, we're outpacing the nation, and it took us a long time to get here, but, you know, things seem to be moving along at a good clip.
Michael Zaharias, you're based out in Daytona Beach. What are you seeing out there as far as, you know, where the good jobs are and where things need to go?
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot of activity on the entrepreneurial front. We've got a lot of individuals who are taking ideas and pursuing their passions. And, you know, you look at the healthcare market, there's a lot of IT healthcare development, a lot of app development, a lot of programming. So it's really refreshing to see that level of interest coming not only from the Daytona Beach area, but really from the Central Florida area and all areas in Florida.
And Dale Ketchum, being somebody who's so enmeshed in the space business, are the kinds of things that you're hearing from Sean, from Michael, is that what you want to see as far as growing Florida's space economy?
Oh, very much so. I think we've really done a pretty good job under the circumstances of evolving post-shuttle retirement and coming out of the Great Recession into really helping us prepare to significantly diversify away from reliance on the federal government and one big space program, because that's great when everybody's fat and happy, but government programs end and then we catch it in the teeth. Mm-hmm. And we've done that twice now, post-Apollo and post-shuttle, and we're very eager to see to it we don't let that happen again.
Do you think things could have been done better to prepare the Space Coast, particularly for the post-shuttle era?
Quite frankly, I think we've done a very good job of preparing, because we knew the shuttle was going to retire in 2004, and the state, the region, Space Florida, the local EDC, the federal delegation, we'd all done a pretty good job of preparing for that transition to take advantage of the thousands of employees who were skilled and trained and had security clearances in making that available, making that aware to companies who wanted to relocate here. But unfortunately, by the time the shuttle retired, the Great Recession had hit the globe in the teeth, mm-hmm. and people weren't interested in expanding and relocating. So we had to adapt. Worst possible time to end the shuttle. But it is what it is. We've, for the most part, replaced most of those jobs with, particularly like in the aviation sector down in the Melbourne Airport, with mm-hmm. Northrop Grumman, Embraer, really trying to build off the existing aviation structure statewide. We've got a huge maintenance, repair, and overhaul capability in South Florida. We've always had Piper in Vero Beach. But now with Northrop Grumman, Embraer was a massive accomplishment here. And they're now doing not just building their business jets, but they're doing their engineering and design in Melbourne. And that's the first time they've done anything like that outside of Brazil. So mm-hmm. we're making the progress we need to, just not as fast as we want.
Sean, let me just come back to something you wrote at the start of the year in your economic outlook. You wrote that construction was going to be one of the big economic forces in Orlando this year. That's traditionally something which the economy locally has relied on, right?
Well, I think, you know, anytime you have a region with population growth, housing and the construction industry are going to be an integral part of the economy. You know, growth has been a little slower in construction than we had anticipated. The level of housing starts that we're seeing is a little bit disconnected from the fundamentals of the economy in terms of both population and job growth, both of which are very strong here in Central Florida. So, you know, we were disconnected from fundamentals in 2005, but in a different way. We were building far more than those fundamentals justified. Now, we seem to be behind the curve a little bit when it comes to housing starts.
And what about one of the other big players in the economy here in Central Florida, the theme park and hospitality industry? You look at the likes of Universal, Disney, that seem to be in an ever-escalating arms race. Some of the other theme parks, too, trying to build bigger and better roller coasters, expand their parks. How much of a factor is that as driving the economy forward?
The hospitality and leisure sector, always the 600-pound gorilla in this region's economy, and now a 700-pound gorilla, because that sector has experienced, even before many of the other sectors started to add jobs, you know, hospitality was doing quite well. And when the Great Recession ended, there was some pent-up demand that fueled growth in that sector. But it, you know, once that pent-up demand had vented, growth continued to take place. And, you know, like you said, there's, you know, new construction and new attractions. And I mean, it's a resource of sorts. I've made the analogy with the shale oil deposits in mm-hmm. North Dakota and Pennsylvania. You know, our shale deposits are, you know, Harry Potter and the Star Wars franchise. You know,
are we running out of Harry Potter or Star Wars?
I think Star Wars could make Harry Potter seem like a relatively minor boost to the industry, because mm-hmm. this is a multi-generational, and I'm sure we all have family members that the kids and the parents are dressing up like characters from Star Wars. And so it's really a deep and broad fan base that I think Disney is tapping into. And I think it's going to continue to feed that sector. Mm-hmm. The airport keeps growing. Passenger traffic is on a very strong trend, both domestic and international.
Yeah, we just saw the Emirates bring their first flight in here, one of those super jumbos.
That's right. And that, you know, that gives us a direct link into not just the Middle East, but India as well. Mm-hmm. It's not a very long flight from Mumbai to Dubai.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. We're talking about the Central Florida economy now and what it might look like in the future. Where's the job growth and where should cities and counties be putting resources? And in the studio with me, Dale Kitchum from Space Florida, Sean Snaith from the University of Central Florida, and Michael Zaharias from the Florida High Tech Corridor. Michael Zaharias, you specialize in entrepreneurship and virtual entrepreneurship. Just for our listeners, what is virtual entrepreneurship? How does that differ from traditional entrepreneurship?
Yeah, so our role really is in the connectivity piece. You know, there's a good number of entrepreneurs out there who are running their businesses or trying to take their ideas to market. And so, you know, in our role, it's how do we connect those individuals to the assets and resources that are available in the community? And so you've got business incubation programs at the university. You've got programs like GrowFL, Startup Weekend, 1 Million Cups, and there's all these great resources out there, but really we have to help bridge the gap between the entrepreneur and those resource agencies to help get them connected so that they can be more successful and be more successful even more quickly than they realized previously. So, you know, our role is how do we facilitate that connection using the internet? We know most of us go out to the internet to research information before we do something. That's the same principle and philosophy in our world, is bridging the gap between the entrepreneur and the resource agency that's out there.
So you're reliant a little bit on the infrastructure. Is the internet, for example, just to ask a kind of basic question, is it fast enough in Florida for what people need it for?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're seeing a lot of activity, particularly in the rural areas, upping their bandwidth capabilities. But yeah, I do believe we have the capacity in place. Certainly, there's always room for improvement, but entrepreneurs are building high-tech IT companies and using the infrastructure we have and are being very successful at it. Actually, over in my area, Daytona Beach, Volusia County, we had a healthcare IT company be mm-hmm. ranked on Inc. magazine's 5,000 fastest growing companies. It's very impressive to see how quickly these IT and app development companies can take an idea and go to market and get results.
They're quick to grow, but are also quick to fail sometimes? Is that a concern?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we're all going to have failures along the way. And so how do we, you know, take those learning lessons in to prepare ourselves to be successful the next time around? I mean, the entrepreneurs I engage with, many of them will tell you they failed multiple times before they actually hit success. And even in some cases, their success, there's been failures along the way in those businesses and endeavors.
Is there enough money in Central Florida or just in the state as a whole? If you talk about some of these startup companies, you know, do they have enough seed funding to get going?
You know, I got to give great compliments to Orange County government for the investment they made there in the Fire Spring Fund, putting $100,000 into, you know, the early stage seed development. We definitely need more capital for early stage. What we're also finding is that through the Florida Angel Nexus, they're working to match in Florida investors with Florida companies that need investment. So, you know, I think there's capital out there, but it's matching the two, identifying the investors that are in our community or in our state and matching them to companies that can utilize their funding so they can take investment right from Florida and not from areas outside Florida, which potentially leads to them being relocated to those areas.
Right. Dale Kitchum, one of the things that people can invest in the high-tech field is, of course, space, and we've seen quite a bit of that in the commercial space field. What's happening as far as new things coming on the Space Coast and people investing in that?
Well, that's almost a soft pitch. On the 15th, we're going to be having a very significant announcement at Kennedy Space Center, actually at the Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, with Jeff Bezos coming into town to announce something relative to his Blue Origin launch project. Mm-hmm. And it's a very exciting opportunity that is a huge development for the state of Florida, something we've been working on a very long time. And it's an appropriate reflection. We have a number of self-made billionaires coming into the commercial space business. Obviously, Elon Musk is the guy who's made the most traction so far, but you have Jeff Bezos. You have Paul Allen, who helped form Microsoft. He's, as we speak, building the largest aircraft in the history of the world in California. Stratolauncher is the name of the vehicle. It's two 747 fuselages with almost a 400-foot wing, and it launches up. And it takes the same concept as Virgin Galactic. It's going to be really neat. It launches horizontally. So you have Musk, Bezos, Paul Allen, Branson mm-hmm. with Virgin Galactic, Bob Bigelow out of Nevada.
And this is the inflatable space station
correct.
Components.
And they're all putting their money, They could do whatever they want. They've got lots of cash. But they're choosing to go into commercial space because, one, it intrigues them, but, two, they're businessmen. They think there's money to be made. And our job as Space Florida is to see to it that those guys come here. And it's interesting. It's much more exciting and entertaining to somebody like myself who's been in the business for decades. You're used to Lockheed Martin and Boeing and Northrop fighting over projects, but they're big multinational companies that behave in very predictable patterns. When you get billionaires talking about their own money, it gets much more personal, much more tempestuous, much more entertaining. And we want those billionaires squabbling here in Florida, because the alternative is they're squabbling in Texas or Georgia or elsewhere. And if that happens, we haven't done our job.
So, Michael Zaharias, what kind of entrepreneurs have you seen who are gravitating in that direction, if we use that word, to space? Is that something where people are looking to invest in? There's money to be made for sure, but it's also quite risky, right? Rockets can sometimes not do what they're supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of innovations across all industries. And so, you know, you identify, you know, engineers and these real thinkers and innovators of the world and get them engaged in technologies and industries that they have a passion for. They're going to find innovative things that, you know, we haven't yet thought of. So I think that there's definitely across really all industries, not aviation specifically, a lot of opportunity for entrepreneurs to create the next technologies that, you know, none of us have yet envisioned what that future holds.
Mm-hmm. What haven't we talked about so far, Sean? Do you see some areas where there could be some surprises as far as new directions the economy could go in that we haven't thought about yet?
Well, I think the past couple of weeks here in global financial markets have delivered some surprises on that front. So I think there's, you know, increasing volatility right now globally in financial markets. Generally speaking, maybe with the exception of India, a weakening of growth globally as well. So, I mean, there's, you know, those concerns. We're in the 74th month of this recovery. You know, the previous recovery was 73 months before the recession set in. So the prospect of a recession, I think, is beginning to rear its ugly head.
Right.
And we will have another one. We know that for sure. It's just the timing that is a bit uncertain. And questions about, you know, will the Fed, you know, when will they move to start raising interest rates? What path will those interest rates hikes take? So there's, I think, an increasing amount of uncertainty that I think, you know, potentially could be a headwind as far as the recovery is concerned.
What about health? I mean, health and healthcare technology, Michael alluded to some of that out in Daytona Beach area. But here, of course, we have Lake Nona on our doorstep, and that's kind of a growing thing. And there's new things happening with simulation going on there as well. So how does that fit into the whole picture of the economy here?
Well, healthcare is a sector that it's not recession-proof, but it is recession-resistant. You know, you may – elective procedures you might forego, but if your appendix ruptures, you have to have surgery. And, you know, if by building that sector in our economy, the next recession hits, you know, the more jobs we have in that sector, the less painful the blow to the economy will be. And as I said, healthcare – added jobs throughout the recession in Florida and here in Central Florida. And as you mentioned, the Medical City area is a really tremendous source of growth right now in Orlando, and that's likely to continue.
Mm-hmm. Dale, you were talking about the way you have these power players investing in space, and it's exciting, but I wonder why more of them aren't putting money into healthcare, or are they doing that as well?
Particularly, you know, like all of these guys generally have other projects they're pursuing. Mm-hmm. Like Elon Musk has Tesla,
sure,
which isn't doing too bad, and Solar City, which also isn't doing too bad. You know, Jeff Bezos just bought the Washington Post for a hobby. That's, you know, he's got and he runs Amazon, which happens to be a pretty thriving concern. So these guys have other areas that they go into, but they're business people. They have the intrigue. All of them were, you know, as Sean mentioned, you know, Star Wars is a generational thing. We've all had, for whatever reasons, you know, Americans are attracted to the concept of space because of the accomplishments our nation has achieved. So it has that appeal, but they're looking at it because they see a business opportunity. And for somebody who's been in the business my whole life, that's really exciting because the government's always going to be a steady, reliable, relatively reliable customer for space launch and space activity. And they're going to stay here, and we're going to continue to have exploration. That's going to continue to be important. I don't know where we're going to go, but eventually we're going to make a decision as a country, whether it's a moon, Mars, asteroid, I don't care. Let's just pick a place and go. That's going to stay here. That's going to continue to drive imagination. But if you can, America and the world and humans in general have explored for power or for gold. That have been the two primary drivers of our species. And we went to the moon primarily because of a political power game with the Russians. But if we can start to – if people can start to believe they can make a lot of money in space, that's going to be when the market really takes off. And our job is to see to it that they leave to go make that money and come back with the money here in Florida.
And there's some of that happening, too, already, right, with the likes of people investigating asteroid mining, trying to get
very much so. Resources from planetary there. Resources and deep space industries are all looking at real opportunities to go exploit what is out there in space, because there may be rare earth minerals here on this planet, but they ain't rare out there. Mm-hmm. And if we can get them out there, instead of having to launch them and spend the money to put them in orbit, if we can exploit them out there, even if it's just water with hydrogen and oxygen, we're significantly lowering the costs of doing what we want to do to become a species that populates the solar system and beyond, which is what many of us are driven to.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. When we return, our panel discussion about the Central Florida economy continues. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. With me in the studio, Sean Snaith, economist and director of the Institute for Economic Competitiveness at the University of Central Florida's College of Business Administration, Michael Zaharias, manager with the Florida High Tech Corridor in Daytona Beach, and Dale Ketchum, chief of strategic alliances with Space Florida. So, Dale Ketchum, you mentioned that the government has been quote-unquote, relatively reliable.
Yes.
Maybe less so in recent years. Is that frustrating for somebody who's been watching and been part of this industry for so long?
Yes. But by the same token, we've got a country with $20 trillion worth of debt. That's got to get paid off. Short of us finding, you know, hostile alien life threatening the world, I don't see us, you know, doubling the NASA budget. Mm-hmm. But I would like, I think as most of us, we would like to see that money spent a little more focused and a little more targeted. But, you know, we're making progress. But the neat thing is the commercial sector is going to step in and really become the driving force, and the government will benefit from that commercial activity really driving technology. And that'll mm-hmm. be good for everybody.
Michael Zaharias, you were talking about the Florida Angel Nexus just before. Is there anybody in that Nexus who's interested in space specifically?
You know, really, we need to get you connected with the staff members of that program and that organization. They've mm-hmm. really got the pulse on the investment community and where those investors are looking to make investments in terms of industry. But, you know, at the same token, the Angel Investment Group is working to prepare Florida companies to present their products and their ideas to obtain that funding. So they really are working with entrepreneurs and companies that are across, you know, various industries. And so, you know, I think there's opportunity in the space sector and aviation, but I think there's many other industries they're dealing with as well.
You gave kudos to the Orange County government for putting in that $100,000 in to the startup world. But are there other things that you think local governments could be doing or they should be pursuing more aggressively to try and spur this growth?
From my experience, I mean, it all comes down to culture. When you look at where entrepreneurs and startup companies are gravitating towards, they're gravitating towards areas where other like-minded individuals are. So, you know, you take an area like Silicon Valley and they have not only the resources and the capital out there, but they've got a strong community of entrepreneurship. And so you model that here in Florida and you say, how do we create hubs of entrepreneurial activity? We've got to bring together these individuals, get them collaborating, get them talking. Your hindsight becomes my foresight. And, you know, how do we become partners in maybe working together to expand my idea and your idea and making something even bigger and better? So, you know, I think the government side is working very hard to change the perception of government. It's very refreshing, again, to see Orange County government put that type of support towards the startup community. And there are many other governments that are putting in place co-working facilities, business incubator programs. And I think those efforts are going to pay extreme dividends to helping those areas create entrepreneurial hubs and entrepreneurial activity that is going to create the next generation of jobs and the next generation of innovation, not only in those communities, but across our state.
Sean Snaith, let me ask you this question. Are we getting enough people in the kinds of workforces for the kinds of industries we're talking about now, like the high-tech industry? Are enough people coming to spur those on from beyond the entrepreneurship stage into something sustainable?
I think, and just to follow on the point about local government, I mean, Orange County sponsors a number of economic development initiatives, and actually pretty unusual for county government. I think they understand economic development, and I think the way they approach it, you know, this sort of public-private partnership, you know, everybody's on the same page. They're not, battling against one another. And we spoke early of Medical City in Lake Nona, and I mean, here's an example that, you know, really stands out, you know, across the country is you know, an incredibly successful economic development initiative that is, you know, is continuing to pay dividends, and it's really not even fully developed at this point. I mean, there's more to come. So I think we are creating jobs. You do see job growth in high-tech sectors and sectors beyond tourism. It's just that tourism is so big and growth has continued to be strong. So you've got this giant muscle and, you keep doing reps and increasing the weight. Well, we're developing other muscles in our economy as well. But, you know, that relative share doesn't move as much because you've already got, you know, such a concentration of employment in that sector. But it has been pan-sector, healthcare, high-tech jobs as well. And, and you know, Orlando's doing very well in terms of job growth. And like as you mentioned, the fastest in the state, one of the fastest in the country.
And when you talk about tech too, the tourism industry has a pretty important tech component to it, right? I mean, some of the innovation we've seen, Disney, Universal, not just the rides, but how they move people through those spaces, tech is a pretty important component of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think when people speak of the hospitality sector, they usually just point at sort of lower paid jobs, you know, busing tables or waiting tables. But you're right. These are major companies with high tech components. They're, you know, engineers and other white collar, you know, good paying jobs within that sector. It's not just, you know, dishwashers. And so that feeds into it. I think we've, you know, what UCF's trying to do with the downtown campus and the Creative Village, I think that's the kind of culture and atmosphere that you're trying to develop. In fact, I was in Seattle last week, and was talking to a young man, a senior in high school, was looking at coming to UCF. He's interested in video game programming and design, and his guidance counselor in Seattle pointed out UCF as being one of the top places in the country. And I think that reputation will feed on itself and make the job of developing high tech a little bit easier.
Dale Ketchum, there was a pretty big outflow of well-educated workers once the shuttle program ended. Some of them weren't able to come back for one reason or another, but now we have this burgeoning commercial space sector. Do you see enough being put into attracting the right kind of workers to the state of Florida?
Yeah, I guess I can't complain too much. I think we're making what's going to be neat is with the announcement in a couple of weeks, it's going to be the next big step in our efforts. And these have been ongoing now for really a couple of decades. Traditionally, Kennedy Space Center and Cape Canaveral Air Force Station have been simply points where you ship it here and we launch it, ship and shoot. And the state and the local region have been working assiduously over the last couple of decades to try to move up back up the food chain so that we're I guess about 8 years ago, the state invested $35 million in the ONC facility at KSC, where we were able to now assemble the Orion spacecraft for Lockheed Martin. And now we're doing the formal ribbon cutting for Boeing's OPF-3, where they're building their CST-100 capsule. And we're going to be moving back up the food chain to building rockets. And then hopefully the next step is satellites. And, you know, we keep moving up back up the food chain. So we're going to be able, the goal being for the commercial sector, we'll be able to offer fruit to nuts. You can come here, design, assemble, build, launch, process, return, That's going to be one of the really neat things about the future commercial space is we'll be able to watch the rockets take off and then be able to watch them come back and land. And that will certainly add to the additional tourism impacts of space, because we still have a lot of tourists who want to come into the state to watch a rocket launch. That's still sort of a bucket list kind of item for a number of people, and the state's now aggressively trying to market that, you know, come to Florida to watch a launch, because we're launching now more than ever. We were at once every 2 weeks this year up until we had the SpaceX hiccup, but they'll be back in the game, and then they'll have to make up time next year to clean up the manifest. And we were already scheduled to be once every 10 days next year. So we're going to be launching a lot. It's going to help drive, make it easier for us to drive people to want to come here. So, you know, there's a tourism aspect to that as well.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty, talking about the Central Florida economy, where the job growth is, and particularly the space economy out on the Space Coast. And with me in the studio, Dale Kitchum from Space Florida, Sean Snaith, UCF, and Michael Zaharias, Florida High Tech Corridor. Dale Kitchum, I wonder about this, though. Florida was the scene of the Apollo missions. It was where the shuttle launched from, and it still has all that infrastructure. But you have some challenges, too, because, you know, there's the threat of rising sea levels. There's weather events like hurricanes. Is Florida still going to be the best place to launch these missions from, do you think? Or do you think some of those climatic challenges are going to pose more problems?
The answer to your question is yes, Florida is still the best place to launch and land, and will remain that way. The challenges of sea level rise are challenges that confront all industries. Mm-hmm. I mean, we will adapt to that. There's still a reason why the federal government chose to come here for launching. I think the biggest problem we are confronting is not so much sea level rise as simply running out of room, because space launch activity requires a significant area to clear when you're doing a launch or a major testing. And the Air Force has already said we're pretty much out of room at Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. NASA has its challenges at Kennedy Space Center, although they are working to provide more capability. At the end of the day, national security is and shall remain and should remain the priority mission at Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, and exploration missions will remain the priority at Kennedy Space Center. And we're trying to lure commercial enterprise who are interested in competing on the global marketplace, responding to their customers, and they're reluctant to go into an environment where they have to play second fiddle to a higher priority when you've got Texas and Georgia and North Carolina and elsewhere being able to offer. You don't have to worry about that. You can come be here, and the only person you have to respond to is your customer. So we have market forces are our biggest challenge right now, not sea level rise.
And there's competition from states all the way up the East Coast, too.
Oh, no question. Georgia is supposed to start, I believe, this month, their own environmental impact statement for a launch site in Camden County. It was the location that came in second for the moon launch site. Mm-hmm. You can launch from there. So we're in a competitive marketplace. That's why we're pushing our Shiloh site up at the north end of Kennedy Space Center. And there's environmental pushback, as there should be. That's appropriate. That's how the process works. But at the end of the day, we think we're going to prevail simply because that's what the land was taken for. It's a land use issue, quite simply. But this needs to be an opportunity to work with the environmental community and the recreational community that's up there now to figure out how to do this properly, because I've been to Atlanta, Georgia, listening to their conversations about their spaceport. I've been to Brownsville for their public hearings on their environmental impact statements. And both of those states point to Florida and the Cape as proof positive that space and nature and recreation can get along well. And so we're the example of it, and we need to continue to do that, and that's the plan.
As a final thought, Dale Kitchum, what's your prediction for the way that the space industry is going to go here in Florida in, say, the next 5 years?
I think it's going to get increasingly exciting. You're going to have SpaceX launching their Falcon 9 Heavy, which will be the largest vehicle on the planet at that time. Elon Musk continues to say that he personally wants to go to Mars. That's what's motivating this whole thing. He jokes. He says, I want to die on Mars, just not
And there's plenty of other people who are saying, yeah, give me a one-way ticket to the red planet too.
Well,
right?
People want to do that. I mean, he may get to Mars before NASA does. But all of this encourages and builds an energy and an enthusiasm and innovation with Jeff Bezos and others wanting to come here. I think we have a real opportunity to start building some synergy for both the government and the commercial sector, all feeding off the same talent base. And fortunately, what we're focused on is making sure the supply chain is here, the workforce is here, the educational capabilities, the research, to really become the gateway to space for the future. That's our job, and I think we've got a great opportunity to do just that.
And is Florida doing well in that regard as far as workforce, supply chain, and infrastructure?
We have a lot of work to do, but to answer your question, yeah, I think we are doing a pretty good job. We're not perfect, but I think most any other state in the union would love to be us. We just can't blow it.
Michael Zaharias, let me ask you that question. What does the next 5 years look like for entrepreneurship and specifically virtual entrepreneurship?
I got to tell you, I think right now there's no better time to be an entrepreneur. I think we have one of the most robust entrepreneurial ecosystems here in Central Florida and again across the state. And the amount of emphasis and resources and dollars that are being put towards supporting these innovative ideas and companies that are out in the marketplace, again, I really feel like it's just an ideal time. So I think over the next 5 years, we're going to see even more entrepreneurial activity, even more innovations coming from the entrepreneurial community. And we're going to see ways to really highlight and celebrate the entrepreneurs we have here in our community and in our state. And I think if we are successful at doing that, we will raise the visibility for Central Florida and our state across the country and across the world. And that in and of itself will draw people to look at this area, to consider this area, and to ultimately locate to this area to expand their business, to relocate their business, or to, you know, pursue that passion and that idea that they have. So I couldn't be more excited about where we are, where we're going, and all the great collaboration that's being done in the Central Florida community and across the state.
Sean Snaith, you mentioned obviously there's some pretty big global challenges, specifically in the last couple of weeks, but how do you see the next 5 years playing out, if you can look that far ahead?
Well, yeah, I often do, and hate to end on a little bit of a down note, but within the next 5 years, I think we will experience a recession. The timing is a little bit uncertain. I don't think it'll be as severe as the Great Recession, but that's part and parcel of the business cycle. So you're going to have ups and downs as you move through the business cycle, but the trends for Florida and for Central Florida, despite what happens with those cyclical variations, I think are still, you know, very strong. You know, once a year, we do a 30-year forecast for the state and the regions across the state, and I think the fundamentals of population growth and job growth are going to be there for Florida for decades to come, despite the little ups and downs that are going to naturally occur along the way.
Sean Snaith is the director of the Institute for Economic Competitiveness at the University of Central Florida's College of Business Administration. Sean, thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Also joined by Michael Zaharias. He's a manager with the Florida High Tech Corridor in Daytona Beach. Michael, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Dale Kitchum, Chief of Strategic Alliances with Space Florida. Dale, thanks for coming in.
Always a pleasure.
Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. The executive producer is Catherine Welch. Tune in on Friday morning at 9. We'll be taking your calls for the weekly news roundup. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.